Joining us now is the CEO and founder at Canvas AI, Jared Feldman. Jared, how are you?
I'm doing great, guys. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks for coming on. Super excited to have you here and learn more about Canvas. So let's just get started with that. Tell us about Canvas. Tell us how you're innovating the industry.
Absolutely. Canvas, our mission is to try to make the world more empathetic. We're focused on leveraging our patented AI and machine learning technology to read and understand how people are thinking and feeling from what they express in open-ended responses. So what we think about every day is empathy and how to make it easier for organizations to make more empathetic decisions. And so at a high level, we've been around for over 5 years. Our journey started with ingesting and analyzed public and unsolicited dialogue happening in social media land. So Twitter and Facebook and YouTube and Instagram. We had the great pleasure of working with most of the major media companies in the world to help them understand how people feel about their shows and their advertisements and their partnerships and their commercials and all that good stuff. And what's happened over the last 2 years or so is we've expanded the system. It's been trained now on tens of billions of pieces of text happening in the social sphere. And we turned our attention to researchers and CX professionals who have this crazy problem around open-ended responses, where for the most part, you know, quantitative questions and close ends and your sort of NPS scores and all of those multiple choices are really easy to analyze at this point. But we're in this sort of more macro environment where it's becoming much, much more efficient to collect responses, a sort of micro survey category where, you know, researchers are now able to expect, you know, results from consumers, you know, within hours, if not minutes. But then the open-ended survey responses are being hand-coded by most researchers today. Yeah, most researchers today are literally reading every open-ended response and having to one by one figure out what is it that Adam meant when he said that, or what is it that Jared meant when he said that, and what are the common ideas and responses here. And they're ultimately trying to get to an answer to the question to make some sort of evidence-based recommendation or decision for the organization. And it's monstrously time consuming. It's super subjective, right? It depends on how you're feeling that day, or even if it's sort of, you feel like it's worth digging into that at that level of detail. And so for most folks, most of the time, they're actually just picking a few choice verbatims or maybe overly relying on word clouds. And so we see this really big opportunity to arm researchers and CX professionals with this very simple, easy to digest ability to quantify with precision how people are actually feeling and what is it about that ad that really resonated, or why, what parts of your service were they upset with, and to do it in a way that's just much more accessible and easy to be actioned at scale.
That's right. It's really cool to hear. And we have a lot of founders and kind of early stage employees on, and it's becoming a common theme to hear that kind of altruistic theory behind, you know, why somebody starts a company. You mentioned empathy as the first factor, but kind of walk us through that journey. Like, what was going through your head that pushed you and led you to start Canvas?
Well, it's a great question. I think that for the founder community, if you're starting something, it really is something you have to be willing to commit to and commit your entire life to for a very long period. And so when that's the case, you really do need a bigger reason to get out of bed in the morning, especially because it's so hard. Starting anything from scratch that didn't exist before requires an insane work ethic and belief and optimism and a support network and people that believe in you. And it turns out that just doing it to make money is not a good reason. And so, or it's not a motivating reason, I guess I'm projecting for myself. And so, for me, when I dug deep into kind of how I wanted to spend my life and what was a worthwhile pursuit, my own personal mission is to try to make the world more empathetic. And it's something that resonated quite a bit. I went to school for music. I grew up in a family with lots of artists, and I've always been fascinated with emotion specifically. And, the Canvas journey has been one where we've wanted to sort of identify and understand how people feel, because that's the very definition of empathy is understanding each other's feelings. And so while in 2014, when we started talking about empathy is important and that it drives business decisions and matters just as much as the behavioral data you're paying attention to, because all behaviors are driven by how we feel. We were sort of one of the few sort of having that sort of conversation with businesses, but I'm really proud that over the last 5-6 years, how important empathy is to almost every major brand we talk to. And it's because, well, unfortunately, maybe people don't really care what you do. They don't care how you feel. They care what you do because of it. Yeah. But all the same, it's really important to have that. So for my personal journey, it's really been about starting a company that I was personally passionate about, didn't think about it as work, thought about it as a lifestyle and something that really motivated me. And then also just being endlessly curious and pulling threads to figure out sort of how this thing needs to evolve alongside the marketplace. It's unfortunate, but most founders think that their success is based on their own doing, and it has everything to do with the market and the team around you, and there's a lot of luck involved as well. And so I can remember starting Canvas and focusing just on Twitter data and TV shows. And TV shows right. at the time were just linear airings. The most important thing was like what happened last night. Right. And now, you know, we consume most of our content whenever we want, and kind of the broadcast society mythology that we only get to watch what people tell us to is sort of totally gone. We have all the power. And so just over the last couple of years, we've had to change how we think about sources of information, like, you know, do we look at tweets or do we look at all social public commentary and now open-ended survey responses? We've had to think about sort of what deserves to be measured and how we empower researchers in this sort of new age to make decisions with it. And just constantly kind of questioning your assumptions. And I guess that's sort of the underlying sort of piece here, is that most founders and entrepreneurs spend a heavy sort of amount of bandwidth thinking about what the underlying assumptions are for any given reality and how should you go about questioning that. And that's really what drives innovation and understanding, well, this seems to be a problem that could be solved. And then how am I uniquely positioned to solve it? And so today, when we think about the open-ended survey response problem, we've spent 5+ years doing nothing but trying to understand modern dialogue, training our systems on literally the largest corpus ever to exist in human history of Twitter and Facebook and YouTube and Instagram. And we're just really well suited to deal with these sort of short form pieces of text with very unnatural language, as you can imagine, lots of misspellings and weird sort of spam and emojis and just strange idiosyncratic details that's makes up the nuances of our language. And we found that if we can just create a simple way for researchers and CX professionals to ingest the information in a way that's trustworthy and can empower what they're doing, it truly is transformative. And that gets you excited. It gets you excited to not just think about what technology can be built, but what can be different in the world because of it. And that's something that that drives us every day.
Oh, that's awesome. You know, I love hearing that story of like your journey, like the evolution of Canvas. And there's a lot, like, even take like the pandemic out of it. There's so much change going on in the industry, like market research and insight, right? And even mentioned like where we gather information from. I guess, where do you see innovation going in market research? Where do you see the industry going?
Yeah, it's a great question. The broad strokes answer is automation. But not in a scary way. I do want to sort of caveat that there's when researchers hear sort of AI and nuanced and complicated technologies that may be nebulous or terms that are overused or improperly used, generally there is a bit of fear that takes place where it's like, well, is this going to replace my job or part of my job? And it's natural. This is like Darwinism in that way. But what we believe to be the real opportunity is to have AI not be artificial intelligence, but augmented intelligence, and really act as an extension of what the researcher can be doing. And so we want sort of the technology to focus on the nebulous, the sort of the nuanced sort of arduous tasks that are better suited by a computer, and really set up researchers to be the superhero and to be sort of the person who is able to leverage their domain expertise and do what makes them excited and passionate to be a professional in this space, which is really, you know, connecting an insight to an action and ultimately being able to point to a decision that drove business outcome. And so in broad strokes, when we think about sort of all the component parts, there's the automation of how we can remove more and more friction from the process of collecting information, of analyzing that information, and then distributing it out to the organization to make some sort of decision. And then there's going to be sort of another sort of broad strokes theme around centralization. A lot of isations here. But the sort of the business intelligence layer that's been, you know, increasingly popular and sort of saturated at big companies is going to really take hold. We've been surprised and grateful and excited to learn that most researchers, as they think about strategic initiatives in 2020, even amongst the pandemic, it has a lot to do with the democratization of insight. And so in order to accomplish that, the researcher has to centralize all of the different data points at their disposal, and then make it really, really easy to templatize and distribute and sort of have those insights be at the fingertips of the product team or the marketing team or the technology professional or the C-suite, the executives, right? And so there's a lot of that happening right now, which is as we've automated more and more things, we have more and more data points at our disposal. There's then this need to really centralize this information in an internal business intelligence platform for the purposes of templatizing and making very accessible the insights that are required to make quick decisions at the speed of, you know, at the speed of data.
Definitely.
Every single day across the different organization functions.
And that's awesome. I'm really interested, and I think with an entrepreneur or any kind of leadership type thing, when you're talking about this journey and you're innovating, you know, the company has to be agile and change. I think one of the big questions, and it's happened to me in the past, is I'm thinking, do I build this internally or do I go outside and kind of, you know, license something or come through? And that's a huge step. I think maybe the first step is the hardest step for a lot of entrepreneurs and you know, leadership, is to figure out what is your process when you're coming into innovating? Like, how do you make those type of decisions?
Yeah, it's a great question. And I kind of think about it from two different perspectives. The first is my own perspective as a business owner and trying to make the right decisions about where to make investments internally versus where to partner. And then just being empathetic to the, you know, our clients and our partners that are really big companies that have to make calls every day about, you know, and, you know, they have the resources to hire a bunch of engineers to try to do something themselves, or they should maybe be partnering. And so the lens that I look at this through is, you know, what do you deserve to be best in the world at? What do you deserve to be best in the world at? And what I mean by that is, you only get to be great at so many things in life, just generally. Right. And so you have to be really sort of cautious and careful about what you become great at. And sort of having the awareness to recognize what assumptions are valid and what maybe, you know, deserve sort of some critique. And so, for example, in the process of deciding whether to build, if you're a big company, build your own natural language processing solution, nearly 100% of people we talk to at big companies that are trying that are always sort of plagued with a, you know, big wave of excitement to start, where it's like, this is totally possible. There's lots of off-the-shelf libraries that do this well. We can very easily save a ton of money. There's like models put together, and it's just so obvious. It's so obvious that you should just do it yourself. And then the nuance comes and the detail comes, and all of the sort of the guy that was originally going to be the person to lead it leaves or gets transferred to another department, and all of a sudden you need more and more resources because of the scope creep. And basically these decisions get sort of validated or invalidated in the details. It is always almost more exciting to be able to just do it yourself. But really, like, in the nuance and in the details, that's where experience comes in. And where it becomes really key to focus on, am I great at this? Is it in my DNA, in my organization's DNA to do this? Or are we better suited to partner with someone who has more experience and has been focused on this, and this is all that they think about? So in either case, when I think about, like, are there elements here that we want to try to build ourselves or partner with somebody, the axis I use is, what is our experience level and what is the general time to implement? And I just weight those factors because the more experience that we have in it, like the more confident I can be in the time it'll take to implement, the less experience I have in it, even if I think it's going to take a month, I've got to sort of 6x that or 10x that. I got to assume it's going to take way longer because all of the nuance and details then become really apparent. So it's a bit of a broad strokes answer, but generally, like if you're not great at something already, it's and something is important from a speed standpoint, it's likely more important. It's likely better to partner with someone who has more experience and can put a little bit more sort of confidence behind the timelines in these cases.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, and that actually flows seamlessly into my next question. We always like to ask, especially entrepreneurs, where do you see yourself in a year? But I guess kind of weighing that based on, you know, where you and your team at Canvas have kind of built your own strengths, where do you deserve to be, you know, best in the world at a year from now? You know, what are those next focuses for you and for, you know, this growing automation AI world when it relates to insights and research?
Yeah, it's a great question. We think about empathy as a service. We want to be our goal here, and we've designed our systems to really be the empathy layer wherever people are giving you how they feel, whether it's happening publicly or whether you're surveying folks. We want to be the trusted standard that can understand how respondents, how consumers, how businesses are thinking and feeling so that you can, as an insights professional, make quick calls on what to do next. And so, you know, our progression is such where we've spent a lot of time working with end users, working with sort of big brands like Disney and NBC and Netflix and Facebook and others that are ingesting our data mostly via sort of dashboards we've created for them. But if I believe the things that I just said about automation, but also kind of centralization, it is really, really important that we're focused on our platform strategy, and that Canvas and all of the technology we've spent all of this time building and iterating on and perfecting over the years becomes available to not only big companies to build into their business intelligence stacks, like Tableau, for example, we're releasing a connector for, and all of sort of the main sort of ways in which you sort of ingest our data, but also third parties that are doing surveys. Any supply side company that is building or has their own way to collect text struggle with what to do with all that information besides create word clouds or use Watson.
Certainly.
and so they're hungry for a solution. And so we just under Aaron Taylor, who I know you guys know, who runs our product and platform, we just released our API. And now we have a number of companies starting to build on top of these capabilities. And I fully expect to answer your question inside of a year to have the majority of the ways that the industry and the organizations that receive our data to be getting it and receiving it alongside their other data points. It's effectively all of the other ways in which they're sort of thinking about making decisions, whether it's in a Tableau or whether it's in a Qualtrics or a Medallia or however they're getting it. Because ultimately, that's how, again, you connect the empathy to the decision, is that there needs to be, that's what an insight is the clearest path between the data point and the action that you end up taking. And so we want to sort of do our part to make it as frictionless as possible to have all of our automation be available in a centralized way so that there's no friction in making empathetic decisions.
I imagine we have a lot of listeners that are kind of in that bucket of, you know, dealing with a lot of the issues that you've outlined. So what's the best way for folks to get in touch with Canvas and to kind of hear about some of the stuff that you guys are doing?
Yeah, right on. I point them to surveys.canvas.ai, and Canvas is spelled C-A-N-V-S. And on that site, you can actually try out the tool yourself. So you can sign up for a free trial. We'll give you, you know, a couple thousand open ends to play with, and you can upload some of your own data so that you can get a sense of how this thing looks and works. And yeah, we'd love to partner with anybody who's looking to make sense and add meaning to those open-ended responses at scale.
Awesome. Jared, thank you so much for coming on. Again, this is Jared Feldman, CEO and founder of Canvas AI. Thanks so much again, and look forward to seeing you down the road. Appreciate it.
Yeah, it's my pleasure. Thanks for having me, guys. Talk soon.
Great.